This is Jean Meth and Harold Kimball for the Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women Oral History II. We are visiting with Dr. Zalman Shapiro. May I introduce him to you, please?
Well, I'm Zalman Mordecai Shapiro, and I live at 1045 Lyndhurst Drive, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206.
Dr. Shapiro, are you a native Pittsburgher?
No, I'm not. Moved to Pittsburgh in 1948.
Where did you come from?
Well, my last place of residence was Baltimore, Maryland.
But as a little boy?
No. Actually, I was born in Canton, Ohio, 1920, May 12th. Moved to Utica, New York, approximately 6 months after that. And we were in New Utica, New York, where my father was the chief rabbi, until 1930 when we moved to New Brunswick, New Jersey. My father died in 1933, and we moved to my grandparents' home in Passaic, New Jersey in 1935. And I completed my high school in Passaic. I started in New Brunswick and completed in Passaic. And went to college in 1938 at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, where I majored in chemistry.
Your grandparents lived in the States too?
My grandparents, I never knew my father's grandparents, but my mother's parents, excuse me, I didn't know my father's parents, my mother's parents lived in Passaic, New Jersey, and I knew them and loved them very much, as a matter of fact.
Where did your father's family come from?
Well, he was from Lithuania.
Oh, he was ugly Litvak.
He was a Litvak, right.
And your mother's family?
They were also Lithuanians, but my grandfather used to work in Pinsk, which I think is Poland, isn't it?
I think it was a little corner that they knocked off of somebody.
He was a carpenter. My grandfather was a carpenter, cabinet maker, actually. And when he came to the States, he started working as a carpenter, and then he became a contractor, and he built the first apartment houses in Passaic, New Jersey.
Really? Were there other rabbis in your family?
Well, my father's father was a rabbi, and I guess it goes all the way back, but
it doesn't
obviously
just
I didn't continue the line.
You never had any inclination?
No, I didn't have any inclination. On the contrary, I had an antipathy.
Really?
To becoming a rabbi. I don't know whether you know anything about the lives of Orthodox rabbis, but they're not very happy.
They're very difficult.
And I decided very early in the game that I would have nothing to do with it.
Well, you became a scientific person?
Well, actually, I always had an inclination towards science.
That's like almost an antipathy of religion, isn't it? Or is it?
No, not necessarily. You can be a religious scientist, can't you? As a matter of fact, I know a lot of them.
I guess so. You say you have one sister?
Yes. And she's an older sister.
She's the older sister. All right. Can you remember anything about your childhood that maybe would have contributed to what you do now and how you do now?
Well, I don't know that I can remember anything in my childhood with regard to what I do now, but I remember lots of things in my childhood which contributed to my deciding not to have anything to do with becoming a rabbi.
Do you have children of your own?
I have three children. I have two boys and a girl.
Do they live here in the city?
My eldest son lives in New York. He works at IBM. My next in line. He's a son who made Aliyah. He moved to Jerusalem last June with his family and the family of his wife. And they had two children when they moved, and they had another child in Israel. So I have one granddaughter who is a Sabra.
And your youngest?
My youngest is a daughter, and she is in New York. She works there.
All right, I would be interested to know if you feel that there was a difference in the way you raised your children as opposed to how you were raised.
Well, I...
Is that a difficult thing?
I don't doubt that there is a great difference in that. I think I was probably less of a disciplinarian than my mother and father, although that might be contested by my children. I tried to give my kids what I didn't have.
Sounds normal.
And maybe I overdid it. Does that sound normal too?
That sounds normal. But who is to say what is overdone?
Well, I guess that depends upon how the kids turn out.
Sounds like they're doing very, very well. You say you are now, you're retired?
Yes, I'm retired, but I'm doing some consulting.
I'd like to ask you about your hobbies. Just a moment.
I didn't mean to interrupt
That's
you.
Right.
I just wanted
go ahead,
to alert you that since you're talking about your work, I wondered if you were ever working with the atom bomb or the atomic part of Westinghouse.
No, I didn't work on the atom bomb. Actually, what happened was that when I came to Pittsburgh and started to work for Westinghouse, my major was physical chemistry. That's what I got my PhD in. And I was hired by Westinghouse at the research laboratory with the objective of injecting some science into their ceramic department at the research laboratory. After I was there for, I would guess about 4 or 5 months, they started the nuclear division of Westinghouse. What had happened at that time was that Admiral Rickover decided that he wanted to build a nuclear submarine. And he wasn't an admiral at that time, he was captain. But in any event, Westinghouse was given the contract for the development and construction, development actually, of the submarine reactor. And I was asked then to move from the research laboratory to Bettis, which was the Bettis Field at that time. It was an old airfield, which is close to the Allegheny County Airport, and that was taken over by Westinghouse, and converted the hangars at that time into a laboratory, and I was one of the first maybe half dozen employees. And so I worked at Westinghouse at Bettis from 1949 for approximately 8.5 years until 1957, as a matter of fact.
Did you know Ben Saya by any chance that worked at Bettis?
If you had to make a choice of what organization, the community, you would like to give your efforts to, in what area would you work? In other words, would you work for the Zionists? Would you work for UJF? Do you have a particular fondness for any particular area?
Well, I am working for the ZOA, and I'm a national officer. I'm a vice president of the ZOA. I work for the Federation. And I've been a division leader in the past, and this past couple of years I have as well. I'm in charge of chairman of the matching Gifts program. And I've also been a officer of the American Technion Society. The Technion, if you know, is a university, an engineering school in Israel. And I have worked for, I'm a director, newly elected, of the Hillel. I work for the ADL, and I work for, I'm on the CRC.
In other words, you work in every facet of the community?
Well,
sounds
I'm working in a number of facets of the community, Jewish community particularly.
You said your one son made Aliyah to Israel.
Yes.
I would assume then that this is definitely a Jewish-oriented household, regardless of the fact that you did not want to be a rabbi.
Yes. We keep a kosher home. My inclinations are toward orthodoxy, but I am not orthodox, if you know what I mean. I go to an orthodox shul.
Which shul do you belong to?
To the Young People's Synagogue, which is holds forth in the it's a do-it-yourself synagogue, which holds forth in the Hebrew Institute.
Would you like to tell us more about the Hebrew Institute, how they practice that, the religion there?
Well, the Hebrew Institute actually has nothing to do with the Young People's Synagogue. The Young People's Synagogue simply rents the space at the Hebrew Institute, and we use the auditorium for Sabbath and holiday services. And when I say it's a do-it-yourself synagogue, we have no rabbi, and we don't have a cantor. People in the congregation officiate, and that's the way our services are conducted. As a matter of fact, you had mentioned Al Bloom. Al Bloom was one of those who officiated in
that. I found that interesting because I attended one service there, and I thought it would be good to record that as some of your background.
Well,
there were a lot of young people belong to it.
There are a lot of young people. I was a young person when I when I joined.
You still are.
As a matter of fact, I joined shortly after I arrived here.
Mm-hmm.
But we have in that synagogue, strangely enough, a lot of people from CMU and Pitt, and as a matter of fact, also from there are some from Duquesne who teach. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
You want to ask that question again?
The services at Young People's, do they have anything in common? Are they the same as the Reconstructionist, or is that a whole different thing?
No, the Reconstructionists have a place at the Hebrew Institute, which they use as a synagogue, and they meet, as I recall, every other week. The Young People Synagogue meets in the auditorium, and it's a considerably larger congregation. The Young People's is an Orthodox synagogue, whereas, of course, the Reconstructionists are not.
That's really Reformed.
Totally separate. Yeah, it's Reformed in a way.
How do they handle the membership? For example, I was a visitor, but do you have to join? Are there yearly?
No, you don't have to join. You're welcome to come to services.
I see.
But what happens generally is that if you want to be assured of a seat during the high holidays, it's desirable to buy a seat, and that entitles you to membership, as I recall it. But anyway, you buy your seat, and you become a member.
No annual dues, then?
Frankly, I don't recall. My wife will probably know that.
Must be that you have
she
to.
She pays the bills.
Yeah, you have to support the synagogue.
Yeah.
And that's really the only way you can support it. Without support, it won't last.
Right.
Dr. Shapiro, you went to many different schools. As a young man, you went to a number of different cities, and you went. Did you encounter any anti-Semitism as you traveled through all these schools?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I guess I encountered anti-Semitism from the earliest age. First of all, as the son of a rabbi in a comparatively small city, you're subjected to that. I do remember, well, in Utica, my sister went to, I guess, it was now junior high school, and I recall that one of her teachers was really, because she was the daughter of a rabbi, seemed to have an in for her. And my father had to actually go to the school and visit the principal and object, and that was it was a serious problem for my sister. But I recall, as a result of that, my father was asked to address the graduation class subsequently. When I moved to New Brunswick, there were frequent occasions when I was literally pursued by a bunch of hoodlums. This was very frequent. And I had a fight to
survive.
Right.
What years were those?
Let's see. I was 10 years old when I moved from Utica to. So I was between 10 and 15. I guess I was around 10 to 13 or so when I was encountering all of this. And I went to junior high school in New Brunswick. And I had a teacher, I'll never forget her. Her name was Miss Wall. And she was my homeroom teacher and also my English teacher. And she seemed to be the epitome of anti-Semitism. In addition to that, I seemed to be from the wrong side of the tracks, and you know, it all added. So I had a pretty rough time at that time. I remember one incident. God, it's amazing how some of these things stick in your mind. There was a contest that she started this. Mind you, this was an English class. And why she did this, I think, simply because she was a bit lazy and she really didn't want to prepare lessons and do things. But anyway, she decided, as a result of something we were reading, that we should all the boys should build birdhouses. Could you imagine that? And there was going to be a selection of the winner. I don't know what the winner was going to get. But anyway, there was going to be a selection of the winner, and the judge was going to be the teacher, the woodshop teacher. So I went to the library and I looked up, you know, how you build birdhouses and what you do and so on and so forth. So I followed the dictates of various things that I read, and I came in with a birdhouse that was along the lines that I suggested. It wasn't, birdhouses are not supposed to be attractive, you know, they're not supposed to be bright color, they're supposed to match the trees and color, and they're supposed to have bottoms that can open up so that they can be cleaned out on occasion. And pretty complicated affairs, relatively speaking, for a youngster. Anyhow, there was another fellow, and his name was Harvey something or other. And he came in with a birdhouse that looked like a house, and it was very brightly colored painted, you know, and everything that the book said it shouldn't be. And furthermore, while it had a hole for the bird, you couldn't clean the thing up. So the woodshop teacher judged all of these things, and he selected mine as number one. And she was very unhappy. Harvey was her pet. And she said, well, that may be Mr. So-and-so's selection, but class, let's have our own. And what she did, basically, was she selected Harvey's birdhouse.
And left you and the woodshop teacher with egg on your face.
Yeah.
How about that?
I recall it really...
But how do you feel?
Interesting how the teacher can be the one to give the blow.
Well, actually, the thing in New Brunswick was, that you recall, this was the beginning of the Nazi era. And New Brunswick was a hothouse. New Jersey in general was known, as you recall, for being a hotbed of Nazism. The Bund had its centers in American centers in New Jersey. And the Rutgers and the New Jersey College for Women, which later became part of Rutgers. My sister was a student at New Jersey College for Women. In any event, what happened was that New Brunswick was really a hot house, and my sister was a freshman at that time. As I recall, this was shortly before my father's death, 1932. And the German department at Rutgers, and I believe also people in the history department at Rutgers and NJC, were where the Nazis were really holed up. And there were a lot of articles appearing. Well, my father used to write articles in the newspapers quite frequently. And obviously one of the topics was the whole issue of Nazism. And the Bundists in the college also used to write or answer these articles. So he got a call one day from one of the people from the college, and they wanted to have a discussion with him on his views. And I recall that very, very vividly, because they, I don't know, three or four of them came up, and they were extolling the virtues of Nazism and Hitlerism, etc. And of course, they had nothing against Jews at that time, they said, so on and so forth. But you know, this was one of my more serious exposures to anti-Semitism. And as a matter of fact, they had proposed at that time that my sister, who was majoring in German at that time, be sent to Germany as a visiting student, as a kind of a demonstration of the, so she could see firsthand that everything was really quite on the up and up, everything was good. And of course, my father turned that down. But those were exciting times, as a matter of fact.
How do they compare to you, to today's atmosphere, as far as anti-Semitism is concerned?
Well, there's a tremendous difference, I think, between what happened then and what happened today. I think we have a different breed of anti-Semitism, a different kind of anti-Semitism today than we had then. The anti-Semitism then, I think, was primarily a religious origin, the Father Coughlin type of anti-Semitism. What we have today is it's an entirely different origin. I think its origin is the economic today because of the whole Middle East oil situation and so on since 73 and prior to that time. But I think that anti-Semitism was out of vogue for a while, as you know. But that doesn't mean that there were a lot of anti-Semites who weren't hidden in the woodwork. I think what's happened is they tend to come out of the woodwork, but the basis of it is different. As a matter of fact, you know, you see the fundamentalists say that they're lovers of Israel, and so on and so forth. They obviously say that they're not anti-Semitic at all. And if you listen to some of them, why they sound very, very positive toward Israel and Judaism. But you, do you remember Father Coghlan?
Mm-hmm.
And there were others of his kind. That was purely, I think, religiously based.
Well, that was pure hate.
Yeah.
And you don't think we have that today, is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that we don't have it today. Obviously, there are many who are reprinting anti-Semites who are reprinting the Prodigals of Zion. Where is it? In West Virginia, I think there was an outfit that was doing that. And that's the same hate origin, I guess. But as I see it, at least, the kind of thing that seems to be surfacing is the kind of thing that, at least what I've seen, seems to be surfacing in the halls of corporations. Well, to give you a specific example, perhaps. I'd better be a little more circumspect, I guess, is the word. What happens is that corporations today are looking for the business that they can get from the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, etc. And there are restrictions. There is a boycott which the Arab League would like to enforce, etc. And the result is that many of the corporations, covertly at least, adhere to the boycott regulations. That means that you seldom hear of Jews who go there to do business. And as a matter of fact, on occasion, if there has been some difficulty between the Arabs and Israel, then obviously Israel has been at fault and the Arabs have to be kowtowed to. And it isn't a question of, as far as I'm concerned at least, Israel is equated with Judaism and Zionism. So when you talk in terms of Israel being wrong, it's not just Israel, it's the Jews and the Zionists, etc., who are at fault, presumably from their standpoint. There have been a number of incidents that have occurred in which this sort of blame has been heaped on Israel and, so far as I'm concerned, Jews, Zionists, etc. And I found that Jewish employees in positions of any prominence in the company have often bent over backwards to assure that they weren't accused of favoring Israel.
Wait, I didn't get that straight. Did you
understand? Go ahead. No, do you have a question? Go ahead.
Would you try to clarify that? Could you use Westinghouse as an example? Or don't you care to? It's perfectly all right.
I prefer not to. Really prefer not to.
Dr. Shapiro,
there have been people in positions of responsibility have often bent over backwards in terms of their
politics. In what way?
Not politics. Their relationship vis-a-vis Israel.